House Bill 5060. And we'll start with...
Chair Minnis.
Mr. Dryden.
Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bob Dryden. I'm Vice Chancellor of the Oregon College of Engineering and Computer Science and Dean of Engineering and Applied Science at Portland State University. We're very pleased this morning to be able to be back with you and extend our support for House Bill 5060 and to remind us all of the accomplishments that have been made to date and justify future and continued investment. Essentially, Senate Bill 504 established partnerships. Partnerships are among the OUS institutions. Between the OUS institutions and the private institution, Oregon Graduate Institute of Science and Technology, partnerships between the academic institutions and the industrial community through the Engineering and Technology Industry Council, and then partnerships among all of those groups with the professional and technical societies, such as the Oregon Metals Initiative and the American Electronics Association. I would like to assure you that the partnerships are working. It permits us to bring the best expertise in the state of Oregon to bear on programs of interest to industry and technical and professional organizations in a very cost-effective and economical way while providing the highest value to those programs. So from an OUS, an Oregon University System standpoint, we're very pleased to have the opportunity to engage in these partnerships and to enjoy the funding that results from that cooperative effort. And now I'd like to turn it over to Jim Johnson, who is President of the Engineering Technology Industry Council and Vice President of Technology for Intel. Yeah?
Just as a quick review, Senate Bill 504 set up the Engineering Technology Council. Don Van Leeuwenhoek was the original chairman of that body, and a year ago I took over the chairmanship. In terms of the goals set out by 504, and then specifically we came back to the e-board with a set of objectives where we said we would take the $5 million that was invested with 504, and every one of those objectives that we had set forth 2 years ago have now been either met or exceeded. Another, I'd say, extreme benefit of the money has been the cooperation between all of the institutions. Again, the master's of computer science degree, which is what 504 is focused on delivering, is now being delivered to over 200 students and is being delivered by the best professors Oregon has to offer. Not just the best professors at a particular institution, but the best professors in any particular topic. If you want to have a course on database, object management, that's being taught by the best professor in the state to these students. So we are very excited because it's now being delivered right to where the engineers are, which is right now 75% of those are in the Portland metropolitan area. Those courses are now being delivered to those. Again, lifelong learning is critical to our industry. Where again, every 2 to 3 years, technologies turn over, engineers become obsolete in 5. So continuing education is critical. So I will now let each of the institutions tell you from their perspective how it's working, and then we'll come back and talk about the future or the next step.
Okay. I'd like to invite the representatives of the state institutions.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Paul Clayton, Provost of the Oregon Graduate Institute of Science and Technology, or OGI. SB 504 invested public funds in OGI in recognition of our mission to work with the high technology industry in Oregon. We received investment to build capacity to serve the most pressing needs of that industry. We've been using those funds to hire and support new faculty in electrical and computer engineering and electronic materials engineering. The support for the startup phase of young faculty within 3 to 4 years they'll become self-supporting from their own research grants and contracts. We've created 5 new courses for working engineers in electrical and computer engineering, and computer science and engineering and materials engineering. OGI became a full partner in the Oregon Masters of Software Engineering and Industry Internship Programs. we were able to leverage the public investment with $20 million of private donations. Direct state investment has helped us to build new levels of cooperation and collaboration with state universities, particularly in the Portland area. We've got cross-listing of courses in electrical and computer engineering and computer science and engineering in Portland State. We have collaborative program planning at the department level for the two schools, and we've seen joint sponsorship of academic seminars in the Portland area. The 1997 legislature laid a strong foundation for growing capacity to meet the demands for engineering education. In OPI's case, of course, that was at the graduate level. The $5 million was invested well. Public and private higher education institutions are working together for the common cause, and we trust that you'll provide further investment in engineering education and continue to encourage an area that is so important to our economy.
Madam Chair,
I
apologize for being new on the committee and some of these things I haven't had a chance to look at, but it indicates here in a third board on the Department of Higher Ed Engineering Education Expansion that the 504 monies are continued in the legislative approved budget. $5 million, a one-time shot for the biennium, and now continue with another $5 million, or was it a long process where it just got apart over a series of bienniums?
There was a $5 million that was in the rollout, is that correct?
That's correct.
And this is an additional $5 million to that.
So there was $5 million in 97, $5 million now in the budget again, plus this was the third $5
million? No. Oh, you're right. Just a second. There was...
Well, this is additional over what was included in the legislative approved budget.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I may explain, last session, Senate Bill 504 did give an additional $5 million that was used for the graduate education programs that are being discussed right now. What the proposal is, and that is part of OUS's base budget now, so that became a continuing part of their budget. So that $5 million continuation has already been approved by this subcommittee in House Bill 5022. What House Bill 5060 would do is add a second $5 million to that. This is not by any means all of the money that's going to education, engineering education. There's a bunch of it in the base budget prior to 97. In 97, $5 million was specifically added, and this would be a second additional $5 million if you approve it.
There will be $5 million that rolls up in the budget. Basically, go the same direction as it had gone last biennium.
That is my understanding. That,
so,
I think some keep rising
to that master's graduate program and so forth.
Ed,
Chairman, Senator Crowe, the Engineering and Technology Industry Council makes a recommendation on how that money should be allocated.
On the $5 million that rolls up, as well as the new $5 million.
There's already been an agreement on the roll up $5 million.
Okay. What is that agreement? How is it being allocated? This time it's different from last time.
The one difference, we had 15 graduate courses that were funded under the first initiative, and since they have already been developed and are now part of the curriculum, that money is being diverted to the Oregon Metals Initiative.
Oregon Metals Initiative.
Mm-hmm. Which would be matched dollar for dollar.
Somebody talk to us about that.
Yes, later in the testimony.
Senator Gordon.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. While we're on the subject of the additional $5 million, I'm looking at the fourth bullet, and it indicates here that the specific programs to be funded with the $5 million have not been determined. So my question is, how did we arrive at $5 million if the programs haven't been identified?
Yes, Madam Chair. The $5 million was an amount that the co-chairs felt would be affordable within the budget constraints. This proposal would appropriate the $5 million to the emergency board. This would follow what had occurred last biennium under Senate Bill 504. The money would actually be appropriated to the emergency board, and then the Engineering and Technology Industry Council would develop a proposal for the use of the $5 million. That would be, they would make that proposal to the State Board of Higher Education, who would then bring forth a request to the emergency board for the use of the $5 million in funding.
So it sounds like there was no real criteria used to come up with the $5 million. It could have been $7 million, or it might have been $9 million. They just decided on $5 million, and now it's up to the ECIC to figure out how to spend that $5 million allocation. Is that correct?
The original request, IOUS, was much more than $5
million. $23 million, I believe.
Okay.
Any other questions? All right.
Good morning, Chair Minnis, members of the committee. My name is Ron Adams. I'm the Dean of Engineering at Oregon State University. And I'd like to talk a little bit about Oregon State's perspective with respect to Senate Bill 504 and the follow-on request. We were involved in both the development of new graduate courses as well as the Master of Software Engineering program that's being offered in the Portland area today. And that was a very good program for us, and we very much appreciated the opportunity to assist the other institutions and work collaboratively to create needed programs in the Portland area. I'm new to this position. Shortly after I arrived at Oregon State, I was involved in a meeting involving the Engineering and Technology Industry Council, as well as representatives from the various institutions that are involved in this process. And in that meeting, we basically worked through a process to create the proposal that was the genesis of House Bill 5060. In that process of creating the proposal, we look carefully at a balance between what our capabilities are versus industry needs and came up with a balanced program involving increases in undergraduate capacity, increases in graduate capacity, as well as a research component. And all these elements were important to our industry council, and we found a way to meet those needs through this proposal. I was really impressed with the collaboration that occurred in that process, having just come into this position from an industrial perspective and having some, I would say, preconceived notions about how it might work. It went very well, and I believe that the combination of the industry council and the leadership of the academic institutions will assure that we will continue to be prudent about how the monies are invested to assure that the needs of our Oregon industries are met. Thank you.
Chair Menace and members of the committee, for the record, I'm Tom Dyke, Professor of Chemistry and Vice Provost for Research at the University of Oregon, and I'm very pleased to be here today to talk to you about the cooperation between the OUS institutions, OGI, and the Engineering and Technology Industry Council. It's been a very fruitful partnership for our institutions and very productive for the University of Oregon and our students. In the past couple of years, we've participated in the Oregon Masters in Software Engineering program. We've seen at the University of Oregon an explosion of interest from both our students and from employers in all of the areas related to computer and information science, and certainly in the areas of software engineering. And we were very pleased to have our Department of Computer Science be able to participate in the statewide program. It's helped us to serve a need of Oregon industries. It's helped us to expand our faculty in the area of software engineering, even beyond actually the resources that were provided by the Masters in Software Engineering program. And it's helped us to develop some research expertise in the area of software engineering. So we think that it's been a very valuable program, both for Oregon students and industries, and for our developing research programs in computer science.
Another area that I think we've, another synergism actually that has developed out of the process of working with the Engineering and Technology Industry Council is the contacts that the academic institutions are making directly with the industries that, the Oregon industries that we're trying to serve. So, for example, we've recently, in our material science area, through our Material Science Institute, developed a master's degree in semiconductor processing, and that master's degree has a strong industrial internship component to it, and the informal as well as the formal support through the statewide internship program under the Senate Bill 504 funding has been extremely important in the development of that program. So we're graduating our first group of master's students this year through that program, and the contacts through the Engineering and Technology Industry Council have been extremely important in the development of that program. So there are some value-added things that go beyond just the resources that are available through Senate Bill 504. And we're certainly looking forward in the next biennium to the ability to expand programs in computer and engineering-related areas. We see the need for growth in our computer science major. We've actually doubled the number of majors graduating in that area in the past 5 years, and we see the need to for further expansion in that area. We also have some innovative programs developing in multimedia information technology minors for a whole range of students across the campus, and we're looking forward to the productive interactions with the industry through the Engineering and Technology Industry Council to foster those efforts. So we feel that it's been a very productive partnership, and we're looking forward to continuing interactions through that program. Thank you.
Chairman, members of the committee, speaking for Portland State University as Dean of Engineering and Applied Science, I would also like to indicate the benefit that we have received from participation in these collaborative and partnership agreements. We've participated fully in the Masters of Engineering and Software Engineering and used those resources to add one computer science faculty in that specialty. We were also the beneficiary of one new faculty position under the Faculty Infrastructure Program, in which we added one electrical and computer engineering faculty member. I might also add these are the first two faculty members, or the only two faculty members, that have been added to our school during the 4 years that I've been dean. We also participate in the development and presentation of new graduate courses. Two of these courses are web-based courses, first of which was offered in the winter quarter, and the second is offered this spring quarter. We were very pleased to be able to participate in those. We have faculty from the different institutions that's co-teaching some of those courses, and we feel like that enriches the course substantially to have that collaborative initiative. Also, we're participating in the internship program, and we hope to benefit from having growth in the graduate programs, particularly in the Master of Engineering programs, from new graduate interns that will result from the funding in Senate Bill 504. In all, it has been a very rewarding experience. Our faculty members have had the opportunity to work shoulder to shoulder with other faculty at institutions across the state, and that has produced a relationship that makes us more aware of the expertise at other institutions and lets us bring, as I mentioned before, the very best to bear on any particular course. So I would like to extend my thank you for that opportunity and encouragement for continued funding.
In the original discussions around the $23 million addition to the budget, I know you considered the undergraduate programs in each of the institutions. I wonder, with the $5 million, whether monies will reach the undergraduate programs. There are lots of student demand for those undergraduate programs, and students who want to get in them are not getting in them. and so I'm wondering whether or not that's high priority with this $5 million.
Minister Trell, if I could, I'd like to delay the answer to that question until we have the president of the Engineering Council, who will talk about the priorities for future funding as a major
goal. Well, I'd like to get back to that.
Yes, sir.
Just a point of clarification for me and my understanding. Are these dollars being leveraged?
Chairman, Representative Winters, in some areas they are. In the internship program, industries are putting up $1,000 per intern as their portion to matching state resources. In the all of the research involving metals industries, all state money is being matched dollar for dollar. The Masters of Software Engineering was set up to actually become a self-supported program over the first two or three biennia, so the industry are paying market rates for those courses that will permit us not to be back asking for more at some point. We have not achieved that break-even point at this time. The graduate courses industry has provided in-kind support in that the courses were developed with assistance from the industries, and the industry representatives are participating in the delivery of those courses at the present time.
Madam Chair, it would be helpful for me if I had that kind of information as to what is being leveraged and at what percentage.
Okay, we could provide that information.
Thank you.
I'm unwilling to wait. I'm going to follow up on Senator Crowe's question, and I'm going to ask Ron. One of our concerns in this whole educational process is that Oregon students are not available with the adequate training to take the very high paying jobs. We're still recruiting people from out of state. Talk to me about how this fits in with that whole flow with the new education model, the additional funds to Oregon State and other institutions, and how this initiative fits into carrying our students through engineering up to those jobs where we have Oregon students who are really competitive for those top jobs.
Okay, I guess without knowing precisely the outcome, the process that we're into involving increases in capacity for undergraduate education really amounts to an investment that's needed to bring those programs up to increase the number of graduates per year. And the expectation is that after that investment is made, then the funding model will take over and provide the necessary revenues to keep the programs running at that higher level. And so in the proposal that we put together, we indicated the investment levels needed for certain capacity increases, which included undergraduate education at Oregon State as well as the other institutions involved here. And by increasing our capacity to deliver bachelor's degrees from Oregon State, then we also increased the opportunity for Oregon citizens to achieve those degrees. I think many of you know that the majority of the students that attend Oregon State University are Oregon citizens. And that's also true in the engineering program at Oregon State. And the majority of our graduates also find employment in the Northwest, whether it's in Oregon, Washington, or elsewhere. So there is definitely a pipeline there. And the investments that we make that result in an increase in capacity of that pipeline will directly affect the opportunity for Oregon residents.
And then that, if when you were describing this money, this $1 million, you were saying that this will meet the needs of Oregon industries, and will it also meet the needs of Oregon students who are in the pipeline?
At the all I can tell you is that at the level of our original proposal, we feel that we're going to be able to satisfy the demand that we see today. And that demand's been growing over the past few years, but we feel that we can increase our capacity to the point that we will be able to meet the demand of those students that we see today.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. I do a little clarification on a couple of things. One is when you look at current law regarding how this money is to be used, one of the tenets of it is to maximize the leverage of state investment. Do you have some idea how much the $5 million will leverage? You mentioned $1,000 for internship, but do you have an aggregate amount of money you believe this will generate from the private sector?
Chairman, Representative Edwards, at this particular time, I do not, and it will depend on what the Engineering Council's recommendation for future funding is. Jim Johnson has a proposal for a lot more money than the $5 million, in which he has listed those areas which have the maximum leverage and has the signatures from all of our institutions that we would work within those and achieve the goals that would justify the industry matches. I don't know in the reduced amount what the position of the Engineering Council will be.
Any other questions? Representative Beckett?
Just to follow up on that, so this kind of gets into the second point. You're going to come in, the request here is to have authorization to have $5 million expended once the council comes in with a plan to the e-board. Do you anticipate then that the council will have a plan that will offer the maximum leveraging as is described by law for the $5
million? Well, let me jump in. This is Jim Johnson. Again, just a quick review. We had proposed a 24.3 million dollars invested by the state. Industry would then come up with an incremental $9.8 million. So now the number, the question is, at $5 million, where all those numbers come in, and we have to work that. You know, one could say proportionately, but I don't know that for a fact yet. The other issue about the first $5 million and the leverage it has created, I think that initially the $5 million was more of a seed. And the initial money was put into developing courses and to getting faculty. I would say because of that money, but not, you know, a one-to-one tie, we've heard already earlier, is the industry and institutions have begun to talk to each other. And, you know, Tom didn't mention, when he mentioned about the multimedia lab, well, you know, people at Intel got so excited about that, $300,000 flowed from Intel to University of Oregon to help fund a really exciting program in which they take their arts department, which is primarily not the one associated with high tech, and now just take that creativity and have them be creative on computers so that all those, you know, when we start looking at screens, what we see is interesting and not just a bunch of techie stuff. So the cross-discipliner of activities is beginning to emerge. So one could say that because of that $5 million investment, a whole new area of potential expertise and center of excellence could develop here in the state. It was not a direct intention, but was an example of getting the two parties together. So I think that the leverage issue is not just a matching of dollars, but is a matching of opportunities as well. And industry, I think, has been very consistent that when we see an opportunity, it makes sense we invest. And so I think, you know, again, at the $24 million level and the $9.8 million a matching part, I'm confident that engineering would have done that and more as we begin to work together, the more opportunities are coming up and more investment is flowing.
Sure. Just a comment. I would hope that the council comes in, obviously $5 million in the scheme of what your original proposal isn't a large amount. So to maximize that, I would encourage the council to make sure it can find as many high, almost one-to-one if it can, leveraging, get it close to the nine. I mean, it won't get to nine, obviously, but to try to encourage the council to come back with a pretty highly leveraged program. This isn't, in the scheme of what you just described, this is, you know, a fairly small amount that we're going to set up.
I like the idea of leveraging. I also like the idea of providing opportunities for Oregon young people, and I don't imagine that you leverage much money with the undergraduate program, but the undergraduate program is very important, and those young people, if they succeed and get through that program, become Oregon citizens who have good jobs and pay taxes and help us by leveraging their activities as well.
Any
And so I just want to make that point that I think that's our biggest responsibility, to see that that's happening. And I don't know that it's happening the way it should happen yet, because there are lots of young people who aren't getting into these programs.
Any other questions?
Senator Nelson? Comment. I mean, I think we were talking to OHSU. They had a leverage program that was actually more beneficial. That if you put up $5 million, they would actually raise $10 million. If you're looking at we want a competitive model out here, where are we going to get the best deal for our $5 million?
As good as that is, I still think we ought to look at our needs first before I grab it and leverage.
And well, the needs are in the health system, too.
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
Senator Gordon?
Thank you. In the original list of priorities for the $23 million, is recruitment and retention of faculty, is that one of the criteria or one of the categories?
In the proposal, there was money specifically associated with building our faculty.
How much was assigned just to recruitment and retention of faculty?
I don't think we broke it out explicitly that way. It's in the numbers. I'd have to redo it. Ron, would you have a guess of what you think that might be?
This is Ron Adams. I can speak for Oregon State. And I would say that out of the Oregon State proposal, the money was there to pay for hiring and also pay for salaries for new faculty, and also pay for additions to equipment and laboratories. And this is a rough estimate, but about 80% of that money was for faculty, and that includes the startup costs. Many of you probably know that when we hire a new faculty member, we have to provide some funding for them to establish themselves in their research program, for their moving expenses and those startup costs, as well as the money needed for salaries until we get to the point where the new funding model kicks in to start paying for the expenses that we're incurring.
Is it possible, if I may follow up, Madam Chair, is it possible that the ECIC would come back with a proposal to use the $5 million for recruitment and retention of faculty only? Is that a possibility?
Again, the council would need to get together and review the specifics. I would suspect a more likely scenario. I mean, I wouldn't just take the 24 and divide it by, I guess it's really 10 million, 5 in the base plus the 5, so you're looking at, 40%. And you could roughly say, let's just take 40% of this and spread it. So we felt in our priorities of undergraduate needed to be addressed. We totally agree that has to be put on the table. The first 5 million is primarily focused at graduate level, but we need to address undergraduate, we need to continue our investment in graduate, and we need to begin to put some energy into research, because that's really what drives the excellence in the system. And then the question becomes, at the $10 million level, the 5 in the base plus the sentimental 5, can we get to all three of those and get the critical mass in all three of those? And maybe we'll only be able to do 2 out of those 3. My personal opinion, again, we have to look for the council, is that undergraduate would be a very high priority.
Any other questions? Continue.
Madam Chair, many members, my name is David Marquette. I am from Oregon Institute of Technology, and I am the director of the Ops for Co-op program. What I'm going to talk about may address some of the issues that have been coming up. The Ops for Co-op program, its program goals are to inform students about and to encourage students at the high school, community college, and undergraduate level enter the engineering and engineering technology fields. These fields include Oregon's high-tech computer and electronics industries. Our second goal in the program has been to assist students at the high school, community college, and undergraduate level in finding meaningful learning experience, work experience, and industry in the high-tech industries. This program so far has been extremely successful in doing this. At the informational level, we have talked to over 1,700 Oregon high school students in the past year, encouraging them, informing them about the field of engineering and the Oregon University System Schools, hoping and getting them to enter the majors.
Sure. Do you know how many freshmen that the Oregon University School can accept? You talked to 1,700. Do you think all of them could get in if they wanted to get in?
It would be nice. There are cutoffs for admissions for each school.
Mm-hmm. So what percentage of the 1,700 could get in if those cutoffs remain in place?
I couldn't even give you a good guess on that. I'd rather not commit to a number. I think the students that we talked to, the classes we talked to, were the high school math and science classes, the students who would be heading towards an undergraduate program. So we're probably looking at a good percentage of those students would continue on in higher ed.
All right. I like the fact that you're building expectations and trying to direct people into a profession. I think, though, that you can build frustrations if they want to go in and then can't get in.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What grade level were you talking to of the 1,700 students?
Most of those presentations were made to anywhere from high school sophomores through high school seniors. My background is, say, as a career counselor, and I understand decision points that happen early as junior high school level, but they start solidifying more and more as you get towards the culmination of deciding on college as a senior. So we're trying to hit students from sophomore year on to start encouraging to broaden their scope of knowledge about engineering technology fields.
Of the seniors, do you have any information that suggests how many of them are going to go forward?
At this point, no. This is a part of the study we'll be doing this June, July. It takes a while to get that data rolling, and we will start polling the high schools that we've gone to see where the students have gone. This is going to be, it has to be an ongoing program in order to continually reinforce that with students and to see when they make that decision and where it can track them. So that data will be available.
What are the things that you conduct the presentation?
Mainly in the greater Portland area. That was our initial impact of the program was to go to Portland, metropolitan Portland area, Washington County, Clackamas, Multnomah, and get the ball rolling there. Get a program that will work and take it statewide. So predominantly it was in the Portland area this time. The second part of this program is to get students into at the high school level and at the OIT level into industry working during summers, in internships during the school year, in cooperative education experiences. That part has been moving right along and it's been fairly successful. This year we're looking at putting out close to 200 students in industry work. And these are a culmination of some of the high school visitations we did, students who had interest, filled out applications and got into the system. Some of the partnerships that have developed because of that have been with the Engineering Council. Council's help, we were able to get some industry members involved heavily. Intel, for example, is a good example since Jim is sitting on my right. At the high school level, they are working. We have 30 to 40 students who will be working for them this summer through a partnership we have with the Business Education Compact and OIT Co-op. In the same breath, we have in Klamath Falls at the OIT campus, we have started out with four students doing a co-op for a call center, technical call center, which is representing Intel products. They're doing engineering support. That support has grown by Intel tremendously to where starting in September we had four out. We added an additional six in March, and the presentation that was made last week for students was they want 20. So just one example of a snowballing effect which is happening with all the industries we go to talk to.
Any other questions? Thanks very much.
I'd like to thank the panel for their inputs and ask again if you would come back to the front. At this time, I'd like to summarize on one page, and I have a handout that characterizes the Senate Bill 504 programs recommended by the council and adopted by the state board and the money released from the e-board for the purposes, the amount of money that was invested in each of the categories, and the partners that were involved in the investment fund for each of those activities. I think we can very quickly see some of the achievements. The Oregon Masters in Software Engineering, for example, we have a curriculum in place. 237 students have enrolled in the classes so far. And this, we have not completed our first year yet. The partners involve OGI, OSU, PSU, and U of O. If funding would permit us to move into the more undergraduate computer science programs, we could expand that to include other institutions in the state. The internship program that Dave just reported on has about 203 interns. It is a program unique to the Oregon Institute of Technology, but the Oregon Graduate Engineering Internship Program involves all four schools, has 16 interns and 13 companies to date, and more companies are joining each week. In the new faculty infrastructure, four faculty were hired. The goal was for four, three at Oregon Graduate Institute and one at Portland State University. The accomplishments toward that, actually two faculty members were hired, some from resources from the Oregon Masters of Software, and then another from this particular initiative involving electrical and computer engineering. New graduate courses, our goal was to have 50 courses developed, 10 traditional courses and 5 asynchronous web-based courses. We actually funded 16 courses. They've all been developed and will all be taught with a schedule having the last course taught this fall term. So I think the accomplishments are a compelling indication of our ability to collaborate with one another. I also might, if I could, mention the relationships that have occurred outside the Senate Bill 504 that was alluded to earlier. One included the multimedia program at U of O. There's another research program at U of O that's in consideration for funding at the $100,000 level. We have a $300,000 faculty grant program in which Oregon State will participate at about $200,000 level and PSU at the $100,000 level. We have 18 new scholarships for the freshman level that are renewable for 4 years, $2,500 apiece. Next year we'll have 18 more plus the 18 we had this year. Those will also be renewable. And we have representatives from Intel who will go with us to other companies to see if they will match those freshman scholarship opportunities. In addition, we have presented a proposal of approximately $10 million for Fab 5 equipment that would go to all four institutions. That could be as much as $10 million or so, depending upon which equipment is selected and which of our proposals are approved. All of that funding is outside and in addition to the funding that was provided by Senate Bill 504.
Okay.
$10 million caught my ear. Would you just explain that again, what equipment you're buying with it and where the money's coming from?
Yes, Chairman Ennis, Representative Ross. This has to do with the closing of Intel Fab 5, and it would be used to establish turnkey laboratories at the University of Oregon, at Oregon State University, and a collaborative laboratory in the Portland metropolitan area jointly with PSU and OGI. That equipment would permit us to move the laboratories up into several generations of more contemporary equipment than now exists.
Thank you.
President Backman.
Thank you, Chair Minnis. I'm on the internship program, opt for co-op, 203 interns. Did I understand it correctly that industry pays $1,000 for interns?
No, that is only for the internship program, the graduate engineering internship program. It's for that $1,000.
Senator Frost?
A couple of us here. If the $5 million came through this time and you made your decisions about spending it and you gave us a sheet like this in 2 years, would it look the same way? Would we be spending it pretty much on the same things again, or would it look entirely different? Do we need to put, for instance, almost half of the money into the software engineering program again, or is that one funded with this $5 million?
Chairman,
we'll look.
Senator Crow, the Oregon Masters in Software is scheduled to be break-even by the end of this biennium, and you would not see that request.
So that one would go away.
It would be self-supporting. The new graduate courses have been developed. You would not see those on a continuing basis.
Would you need to hire more faculty?
Actually, faculty hiring is still a priority for the institutions.
How about the graduate courses? Have they been pretty much implemented now, or do you need more?
The graduate courses are implemented and would probably not be a part of future requests.
Okay, so what would be the big items next time, do you think?
This is Jim Johnson. We would continue our investment at the graduate level. So, again, faculty is a big area where we'd be investing in some course development.
We're always trying to reach for the graduate.
The graduate would also, I think, see a significant increase in probably, Jim Johnson's view, again, I've got to get the whole council there, is that a significant portion of the incremental $5 million would go to undergraduate. Again, the goal, SB 504 specifically said focus on graduate, which is what we did.
Mm-hmm.
I think as we go from $5 million to $10
million. Would it be new aspects of undergraduate teaching, new programs, or would it be enhancing and making opportunities available in existing programs?
Well, again, expanding the number of students is very, very important to us, and we would put high priority on that.
Senator Nelson?
Jim, when you were at Wells Higher Education, talk to you during lunchtime, and I was trying to think one of the men that was there with you, he was from agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't remember what his name was right off.
Rob Miller.
Okay, Rob, mm-hmm. Thank you. But it seemed to me that during that talk that you made a statement that sort of tied everything together from a policy level where you included high tech and engineering and agriculture and sort of direction for the state. Could you kind of reinforce that for me?
Well, it gets down to, you asked a very important question about putting all of this investment engineering into context. And if you could give me a moment, I think I'd like to just set a foundation and I'll specifically address that. Our state has been disinvesting in engineering as a result of output for the last 6 years. AEA, does a survey every year of the, technical degrees offered across the United States. And Oregon, since 1990 to 1996, we have decreased the number of degrees by over 600 degrees in absolute numbers. That's a huge decrease. If you look at that rate of disinvestment and you compare it against all the other states, you'll find that there are only two other states who are disinvesting in high-tech degrees faster than Oregon, and that's Vermont and Connecticut. So we are really rapidly getting out of the engineering business. And if you look at the 21st century and you say to yourself, what's important? I think you're going to have to say high tech and engineering is extremely important. Today, over 50% of the exports out of the state of Oregon are high tech. You know, it's an important element. Every aspect of everything we do in this state, high tech is going to touch. If you're in agriculture today, you go out on a farm, these farms are very, very high tech. You know, they just don't spray anymore on fields, right? They've got, they're connected up to GPS systems, and they've got photos of satellites coming down saying, this part of your field needs this kind of mixture of spray, this part needs another, and that tractor is hooked up, and it's, you know, spraying, you know, as is needed. This is a much more efficient way of doing it. But someone's got to develop that system. Someone's got to maintain that system. And so even though we are still, natural resources are very important to the state, leveraging those natural resources are going to be very important, and we need engineers to do that. Again, there's an article here. I apologize for the quality of it. This is an article from a Bend paper. I was in Bend 2 weekends ago, and it was saying that, you know, we have an emerging high-tech industry there. It's really, really hard. We can't hire the engineers we need. You know, so if a company in Portland goes to Caltech and says, I want to hire this engineer, they've at least heard of Portland, and we have a shot at getting them here. Especially if they're going to work on state-of-the-art microprocessor design. But if a company in Bend, Oregon goes to that engineer, the engineer will, you know, they'll never even connect. It'll never happen. And as it stated in the article, the company eventually has given up. If we want high-tech to grow in our state, we have to grow the engineers here. An Oregonian would love to live in Bend. but someone from California or Massachusetts, or, you know, that is not something that's important to them. So investing in high tech is investing in our entire state and investing in our entire future, because the way high tech is going to spread throughout the state is by creating that infrastructure. Now, high tech is something that needs critical mass every place you go. And if you look at Bend, you look at Southern Oregon, these are emerging areas, and these people are struggling. And this article talks about all the hurdles they've got to go through. And I think we as a state, if we want to encourage high tech in these areas, we've got to help with some of these hurdles. We can't solve all the problems. And industry here in Portland metropolitan area can't solve all those problems. We can all help. But one of the most fundamental elements we can help in is in education. And I think that it's a very, very high priority for us. Again, some things that also jumped out.
All right, get your glasses.
Sorry.
Yeah, just a little sidebar comment here. I think if you go over and examine the population already, you have an awful lot of people that don't come from Oregon on living there. One thing that I'm concerned with here, you got $5 million in 97. That popped right over into your continuing process and into budgeted things, and it looks to me like everything you're setting up here would do the same thing with this. And I'm not against high-tech by any manner of means, but there's a lot of things that we've got to look at with a pretty tough eye here on a budgeting process, and mm-hmm. This looks to me like we'll be coming back in 2001 and taking this in the budget with the potential for another $5 million in there, and that concerns me a little bit.
You bring up an excellent point in that what we are asking for here is an investment, not an ongoing annuity. And again, in the $24 million proposal, we state exactly how much we ask this for this biennium and how much we would need next biennium. And in large part, 90% of it is a one biennium investment. Some things that do take multiple bienniums to support is faculty. When you bring on a faculty member, as Ron mentioned earlier, you have to hire them. There's the one-time fees to bring them in, and then it takes them time for them to generate the student income by teaching, again, with the new methodology that's being implemented with tuition following the student, or get them going out and getting research grants. And that typically takes the professor 3 years to pay for themselves in terms of research. So the supporting a faculty takes about a biennium and a half, or in some cases two bienniums, to totally get them off the books so that they become self-supported. Again, we think it's critical that everything be an investment, not an ongoing annuity.
Representative Winters? Thank you, Madam Chair. And to discuss the investment, I'm looking at part of the mission was to establish a $100 million fund. Is that correct?
That was part of the original SB 504 language, yes.
Is it still the intent to attempt to establish that kind of fund?
Well, again, 504 stated that the ultimate goal was to invest $100 million. And again, we take it one biennium at a time.
So I'm gathering that you don't have a plan on the drawing board. Is that what you're saying?
Well, we have a plan for the next $24 million investment. Beyond that, we do not have a plan. That's correct.
Jim, if I could just ask you, you said this is not going to be an ongoing annuity. At what point, you're asking, you're going to, like, faculty would be rolled up into the next biennium,
into
the five? Jim, how do we distinguish what's going for faculty and what's going for the programs? What's paid for? And how would we make that distinction in the next budgeting process? Just 5 minutes. So the prior $5 million rolled up,
mm-hmm.
and then you're asking for this $5 million. Is there going to be a distinction for ongoing costs or and new programs? Things have been paid for.
Right, and I think that again, the reason, to my understanding of the reason that the first $5 million got rolled up was just the way the business was done. It was not our intention that it be rolled up as part of the university system, but I guess it's the way. The system, the finance system rolls it. So Joe Cox has specifically said, even though it got rolled up, we're going to manage that $5 million as if it was separate. Because again, we're trying to make sure that we're being clean about the accountability and the issue of investment. And I think that next time, in part of the, when we go into the e-board if the bill is approved, we'll be very clear about setting up the process so we can report back not only the results of the investments that we have done the first time, but exactly what money would be carried forward or not. So we're very clean on that in the accounting system.
So the program that you pay for, those always could go towards the faculty from the roll-up from last time, and then the new $5 million would be used for whatever the next phase is.
The next phase, which again will probably be going to new additional faculty, because again, I think with the second $5 million, there'll be a strong emphasis on undergraduate. And again, one of the big issues we have is just sheer capacity.
What do you anticipate for new faculty? I know you have to meet with your board, but look, how many new faculty are you anticipating to hire?
We can go back to the $24 million because there we've got the numbers. And I think Ron and Bob were the primary.
Chairman, in the $24 million proposal, there are faculty tied up in individual program expansions as well as under the heading faculty infrastructure. So what you would see under faculty infrastructure would not be the total number of faculty, but rather there would be faculty at TSU and at Oregon State that would be involved in a particular program, such as the undergraduate program in software at OSU, that OSU has proposed.
Chairman, in the case of Oregon State, our proposal, which included both an increase in capacity for undergraduate as well as a capacity increase for graduate, called for the addition of a total of 11 faculty members in the original $24 million proposal. And those 11 faculty members are a mix of what are called tenure track and fixed term or temporary faculty members. And we adjusted that mix in order to be flexible in response to any fluctuations in enrollment as we went forward.
Madam Chair,
I think you got at my question, Madam Chair, so go ahead.
Okay.
Senator Gordon.
Senator Gordon.
Thank you very much. What is the cost of the 11 faculty members?
The specific for OSU's investment request was $3.7 billion for the biennium.
For the 11?
For the 11. And the other thing that I would add, and I think if you look at the details of our proposal, you'll find that the anticipated follow-on request is about 15% of of the $24 million. You know, if you add up all the little numbers of what we thought the follow-on request would be.
The 11 faculty, that's just at OSU. I'm going to ask the question again. What is, in the original proposal, the total faculty cost is what amount?
Chairman, Senator Gordley. I would have to go back to the more detailed proposals to pull out how many faculty members would be included in the various programs that had been proposed, as opposed to program operation. I don't have that detail with me at the present time.
Yeah, but the proposal was written in terms of trying to drive overall undergraduate capacity up 10% and to drive overall graduate capacity up 10%. And what we just didn't break out specifically was how many professors took to do that. What the $24 million buys you at the end is an increase of 10%, which is about 500 engineers at the year 2003, spring of 2003 when they graduate.
But
and then,
OSU
then
knows,
every year after that.
But OSU knows that they need 11 to carry out their part of the program.
For the undergraduate part, yes.
Right. But we don't have those figures for the other.
Yeah, we just haven't broken them out. I mean, it's just that Ron just happened to know us.
Madam Chair, I think this is a really important issue for us. I think it's frustrating for them because they're trying to put $24 million worth of planning activity back into $5 million. And I understand that that's a frustrating kind of thing. At the same time, I think that it is important for us to have some level of specificity, some understanding about the expectations around this. And if you actually look at the amendments that the chair has just drawn my attention to, it does provide for these monies to be allocated through the emergency board. And so this would give them an opportunity to go back and be specific about what, in fact, they were going to do. And I guess my question, given that context, given the context that kind of stuff it in $24 million into $5 million, the chair is concerned about roll-up costs, I'm concerned about specificity. Jim, could you just give a little summary of what you believe would be done with the $5 million? I understand you can't speak to the council. And we're not trying to pin you down because the e-board will do the pinning down, but I'm interested in what your opinion is about what this $5 million could do for our system.
Okay. So first of all, I just want to reinforce, I as an industry person would never even take your money unless there was explicit agreement on what you would get back. Mm-hmm. So you're right. The process is well-defined. We'll go to the e-board with a very, just as we have here, a detailed proposal in which there's upfront agreement on, for this money, you get this result, or best efforts to deliver it, and it's about this time we did it.
Like a preview.
Yeah. Now, what Jim Johnson thinks the incremental $5 million will go to is probably order of magnitude a 50-50 split between undergraduate and graduate. I don't know how we're going to do the research element of it. It greatly disturbs me that I'm not funding that. But, you know, I can just only hope that industry will step up and do something on its own there. But we have to get undergraduate capacity up. Without the engineers, we don't have a prayer. I mean, it is literally the lifeblood of the industry, and we have to get undergraduate and continue to educate our graduates or our ongoing professionals. So the graduate investment is not just in producing masters and PhDs, it's also in continuing education. a significant portion of it actually goes to continuing education. I think half the graduate level courses that are taught or half the student hours that are involved aren't for people that intend to get a degree. They're simply there continuing their education so that they become, they stay state of the art. So I would envision of the $10 million total, you're going to see two-thirds of it-ish, three-fourths of this continued on the graduate level because we've got to keep that going and then begin to invest in undergraduate. I would like to invest more in undergraduate, but again, I think we'll just have to, you know, we'll have to make the trade-off there. But again, that's just Jim Johnson's opinion. We've got a lot of other people and priorities that we're going to have to juggle as we put this together. And again, we would put in front of the e-board a specific proposal.
Just to follow up here, now talk to me about the flow of this being self-supporting, because that major theme here is that as these people come, that it will turn into a self-supporting operation in many areas.
Yes. The mechanics of self funding comes from tuition following the student. So what we're doing is, in effect, seed money here to give to the institutions, both private and public, who will take that money and develop courses, and then they'll either get the tuition dollars and the research dollars that follow that, or they won't. And if they do, it's self-funding. If they don't, we shut it down.
Thank you.
Fisher?
Yeah, I have a concern. You keep talking about advanced education and keeping up with the times and all this kind of stuff. Granted, I wouldn't necessarily say that my involvement in the healthcare industry is perhaps quite the level, studious level that your engineering concepts are, but we pay our own way. We don't have the state give us a whole bunch of stuff for our continuing education. I don't know how much stuff are given to the doctors for their continuing education. I don't know how many are given to the nurses for their continuing education and other fields. And I just had the grand prospect of taking $10 million out of or more out of the human resources budget, where I knew exactly who was being denied, and they have exact programs and things like that that have been worked on and worked out for years that are having to take budget cuts and things like this. And I'm real hesitant about going ahead here with $5 million on just the fact that we will have, you know, that we will on our say-so guarantee that we'll have good solid programs going into effect in this kind of thing on a $5 million enhancement. And that's kind of what you're facing with me. My decisions, and until we get something settled on this education budget and education funding, there better be some pressure put over in the governor's office to get some of this stuff done in a reasonable manner so that we have an opportunity of being at least fair with our constituents. And I'm certainly not against education, though the qualifications of the people that we need for high tech and so forth. We also have another thing down there at OSU that I'm quite concerned with and would like to see very much, and that's the fourth year for the veterinary medical school. And this $5 million would go a long way toward doing something like that too, spreading out a little bit of this over other sections of our educational process. So I recognize that, at least as far as I'm concerned, I've got a multitude of things that I need to be convinced on before I can really follow the game. If you have the money, no question.
Senator, if I may, I just want to let you know that in the OHSU budget, we did direct $4 million into nursing and dentistry. So we have done some of that. We have targeted dollars for specific programs in other budgets. So this is not unprecedented to do this.
Madam Chair, I don't believe that was in advance. Continuing education.
Yes, it was.
It was?
Yes, that was part of it.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, but I was not aware of that, and I'll be corrected.
No, just informed not to correct. Senator Gordon.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Well, first of all, I appreciate the comments that have just been made by Senator Fisher, who, as I listened is expressing concerns about cuts to other budgets, specifically human resources. And I appreciate, I share that concern. The question is, what is the earliest date that we would know the ECIC recommendation? I am one that doesn't want to wait until something is presented to the e-board. Can't we know sooner than that?
I would estimate it would take us between 30 and 45 days for the council to, I think, come up with an explicit proposal. Clearly, the faster we do it, the less ability we can be very accurate and detailed. And I think, again, it's important that we be accurate and detailed in what we get back. Maybe approximately a month, month and a half.
Madam Chair, Gratton Sharon, representing the Oregon University System, Senator Gordley, the Chancellor's not here, and he apologizes for not being here. He is in Eastern Oregon at LeGrand for the inauguration of President Creighton. He sends his apologies, but as CEO of the system, had to be there this morning. The timeline is that the council will do its work as rapidly as possible. Once it's known that the bill has come out of committee, they will commence work on a plan to allocate that $5 million. It is the board's hope that that will be delivered to the board at its July meeting. Meet in Friday in July, and that would then make the plan available to the emergency board at its first meeting so that we can implement the use of the funds at the quickest way possible.
My frustration is, I think, shared with is the frustration Senator Gordley has, and that is, it would be nice to know what we're buying, and if we decide to go this route, because we've got a way of other things that are very important to us, you would think that there should have been some way that we could have prioritized among the 20, so we'd know what first five were bought, and it's too bad you can't tell us.
If I may respond to that, if I can take about 2 minutes to get back up with the committee at about 35,000 feet and take a big long view of what brought us to this point. Mr. Johnson has done an excellent job of telling us what the deficit has been in engineering, high technology education. It's not just in engineering, it's all high technology, material science and chemistry and many other areas where we have been disinvested. The board worked in the 1995-96 interim to begin developing a plan for reinvestment. Mr. Constantine, I think, is in the room here, brought Senate Bill 504 forward, represented by Oregon Graduate Institute and private industry. So we came together here 2 years ago with a plan to promote in reinvesting in all areas of high technology industry. The model was to do kind of what is occurring in natural resources. Over in the Natural Resources Subcommittee, you've got an $80,600,000 budget for the natural resources for the statewide public services, which is the state's commitment to the natural resource industry. And the approach was to bring forward through 504 that Mr. Conklin brought a $100 million education trust fund, which would begin to match the same kind of advanced industry investment as we do in the natural resource space. This committee, for those of you coming to the committee this year and some coming this week, and who were here earlier but not on this committee, who voted for Senate Bill 504, you took that bill and sat the industry down, all the institutions, private and public, and representatives of those who would become the industry council, and said, we want you to do something which is value added. Bring us new value each biennium and do it in the process that represent industry's need for Oregon education for our economic development, just as we do in the public, statewide public services. That first $5 million, we couldn't tell you what it was. And there was some concern about how it would be divided. And so the board appointed an industry council made up of the leaders of high technology industry in Oregon. You're looking at the leaders. And so it's a tremendous marriage of private, public, and industry around how best to serve Oregon's industry and Oregon's society together through public higher education, private higher education, and industry in a match to try and leverage as much as possible. That $100 million is not something that will grow 5 and 10 and 15 and 25. You'll have a great big $100 million block, but rather it feeds the base, and the base grows. The pipeline will grow for undergraduate. It will grow in internships so that people will have exposure to what will come to them in the future in high technology occupation. It will have a place where industries continuing oversight of the money and your allocation of it comes together. So 504 is really your brainchild in bringing all those forces together and creating, if you want to think of it that way, as the beginning of a the land grant mission for higher ed, in a way to create that kind of collaborative effort. It is a method of you in this round replicating what you did in the last. We're not able to tell you it's going to be 2 million for this, 1 million for that, 500,000 for this, and our, you know, so much for the rest, because the industry council will have to go and look at its needs and then say, what are now those priorities within that? And it will not be, you know, simply $5 million worth of a $24 million ask. It will be, what are those priorities? The board's priority will be to continue to expand the undergraduate pipeline to feed the industry. The industry recognizes that. They also need continuing investment in continuing education, research, and graduate, and somehow balancing those within a finite number of dollars. We can talk about how many professors, where it's going to be, how the money is going to be allocated, but up to 35,000 feet, what you want to look at is you, 2 years ago, set in motion an excellent marriage between public education, private education, and industry to create value added. And you can see from the materials presented this morning, you've got that and more. AGI went and leveraged $3 million on the private side for the money that they got in the software engineering. Opera Co-op, what Wilson said is that each of the students that are in Opera Co-op is getting a salary. The internships are supported by the stipend. So there's a lot of synergy involved here, and you should take pride in what you did in the first round of 504. And now, as we look forward, probably a little leap of faith to say, okay, I see your $24 million ask. I see you've only got $5 million in assets. I don't know exactly how that's going to marry, but you're going to see it in the emergency board, and we want to bring it to you as soon as possible so that it can roll up. Thank you, Madam Chairman. I do have any context to ask those questions.
It's not a word of God. Those of us who have been longtime followers, if not admirers, of Grattan Karen's agree that he views issues from 30,000 feet, even if so with clarity. And so I appreciate that when he does that. And I just actually, what he said probably was more detailed than what I would say. I think that what we have here is the marriage of a public-private partnership that has brought all of the schools together to create what I think is really needed in this state, and that's an investment in engineering. And I'm not distressed that we don't have any specificity. I'm more concerned with what their track record is in terms of predicting what the future may look like. And I think their track record has been excellent, and I applaud them. The only difference between this investment and what we did at OHSU is we are leveraging private dollars with this investment. So this is actually, I think, a much better deal in terms of how much money we're going to get because of this investment for this specific program. So I do believe that this is a worthy investment, and we'll be supporting it.
Representative Edwards. Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess to start off, I think obviously Senate Bill 504 is a good policy, and I think this partnership is extremely important. And we just started this, so I think we're still working our way through how this is going to work. And I have a couple of friendly suggestions, and I think you're kind of hearing it here is, one, and maybe we can't do anything about it this session, but I would argue that the trust me, we'll spend the $5 million, in this case, at 24, I would personally feel more comfortable if we had the proposal in front of us, and maybe that's just a timing issue, I don't know, but maybe this session we can't do anything about it, but next session I would encourage you to have the plan based on some, you could come in 24, but prioritize that so we can make a decision. I think it's better for the body to make a decision than the e-board, quite frankly. And again, it's $5 million, but it's $5 million, and I think it's important. The other thing that's a little troubling to me, and I'm not nitpicking this, but again, it kind of goes to the trust me, I would like to see, again, going back to the statute, and the intention is to make sure that we see leveraging, and I still don't see the leveraging here that was, I mean, we've heard verbally, but I think when you report, we should see how much money this $5 million, I don't have any idea the total of how much you leverage from the private sector. To me, it's fair to say the high-tech industry is doing very well in this state, and I think it's in all of our interest to make sure it continually does well. I think it would be helpful for us to see how we have this partnership. I think, and that is, that partnership requires the private sector to come into this as well. And just a last editorial, and again, I've been accused of doing this, but, you know, the whole issue of education is being a continuum. If you're really going to capture kids' interest in the high-tech industry, you're going to have to start starting earlier than when they get into college. And it'd be nice at some point if this part of this plan over time starts to look at what are you going to do to bring in more high school students. I know the intent is in higher ed, but math and science are obviously critical to the success of your industry. And I think if you look, there's less and less folks involved or kids wanting to pursue that. Somebody just sparked that interest in. Again, this may not be the vehicle, but I think it will be, somehow it should be looked at in light of what you're trying to do at the higher ed level, because, again, I take this view that it's a continuum, and if you're going to have success with these programs as well as in any other in higher ed around sciences and engineering, you're going to have to make sure that the kids coming out are interested more than anything.
Edwards, I would just like to comment on that. I know that CSU has had some aggressive programs in high schools and in going out and being in all kinds of high schools in Portland, and I think their goal is exactly that, is to create the opportunity for students to understand engineering. But we're not going to let you answer that. No answers are allowed here. We just make the comments. You don't get to you don't get to respond. Representative Winters.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To my good colleagues from Portland, there's a reason for long engagements. It's hopefully that the relationship will stay together a little longer. So, half marriages sometimes don't work. But on your request, the $24.3 million, was included in that request the $5 million roll-up, or was that separate?
No, that was included.
So that was included. So that means that actually you're talking $10 million now instead of the $24.3 million. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And you had planned $9.8 million coming from the industry.
Yes,
so, you know, if we kind of use the averages of what you were going to do with the 24, then probably looking at about $4 million maybe from the industry, somewhere around there.
Yes.
actually, last year alone, Intel donated $9 million to higher education here in the state.
Madam Chair, if I could, I'd like to invite Jim Barrett from Precision Cast Parts to speak on behalf of the Oregon Metals Initiative, and Jim Craven on behalf of the American Electronics Association.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the subcommittee. My name is Jim Barrett, and thank you for the opportunity to come speak with you today in support of this bill. I worked as manager for materials and technology development for Precision Cast Parts and its division and corporate offices located here in Oregon. The company at large has been here since 1956. I also serve on the board of the Oregon Metals Initiative as an industry academia partnership in the state that's been around since 1990. One of the things that's significant about this partnership is that it's leveraged dollars. This is a 50-50 cost share with industry and academia. I would like to point out that as we look forward, Oregon Metals Initiative is the model that we are looking to for the funding in the Oregon Engineering Investment Fund. This is something that has a proven track record and has been a benefit for both parties in the years since 1990. Any questions that I can answer for you?
Thanks very much.
Okay, sure.
Thank you, Jim. Jim, in the interest of time,
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, in the interest of time, just real briefly, Jim Craven, representing the American Electronics Association. I just want to basically thank the subcommittee and the chair and the full committee for having this hearing, for recognizing this as a critical need, and we all realize the budget pressures that you're certainly under this session. And while $24 million would have been wonderful, I think you have a commitment from the council and the higher ed partners that we will make the maximum advantage we can out of the basically $10 million that will move forward if this bill is approved. And I just want to conclude by saying that all of these investments are about opportunity for Oregonians. I mean, you have industry up here testifying on behalf of this package because, obviously, it's in our self-interest and will help our companies. But what we're talking about, when we talk about the Opera Co-op program, we talk about undergraduate expansion, we talk about ongoing continuing professional education, these are investments in Oregonians. I mean, none of this dollars comes to our bottom line. These are investments in helping both high school students, college students, people who either grew up here or moved and now call Oregon home, continue their professional career. These are investments in Oregonians, and I just want to continue to stress that that's what this is all about. And some of it takes, we can build products, we can't go out and build higher education programs and institutions. Sometimes the public needs to make those initial investments to get things going. But after they get going, we're certainly there to do our share and to help them become self-supporting over time. So thank you for your time and for the very lively and interesting hearing today.
I just want to add that one of the things that would help us make the kind of investments we need to make in the state is if we could get a continuing, constant tax resource. And I hope you'll help the governor as he's thinking about the taxes we need to do the things we need to invest in the state, because there's kind of an assault on taxes around, and you know about it. And we really do need the tax revenues to do these public service things and make the investments you want us to make.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Chairman, that concludes our comments in support of House Bill 506.
Can I just make one parting comment here? I think that, again, I t- tech produces high-tech jobs, and high-tech jobs are highly paid jobs. If a miracle could happen and it's possible to invest the $24 million that we've requested, that would produce 500 engineers in the year 2003. Those 500 engineers would probably by then make $80,000 a year. You pay your 9.8% tax or whatever it is that the state gets from that. You go through that calculation, and it's about a 4-year payback. So we can talk about leverage. You can talk about taxes. But the best way to get taxes is to have people make a lot of money and pay the taxes that we have. And I totally agree. We need a more balanced system. I personally am doing work on trying to help the governor come up with a system that is more stable. And business is going to participate in that. But I think that the one thing that we can do here is that there's a lot of leverage. You invest the money, you get 500 students in 2003, 500 more students in 2004, 500 more students in 2006 and on. And each one of those people generate a lot of income, and they pay a lot of taxes. So I think it's a good business investment. If I could invest my personal dollars to get that kind of return, I would.
I really agree, but we need the money up front to invest, and that comes from tax.
That's right. So, and, you know, Intel paid their $14 million in property taxes, and we'll continue to do that. We want investment.
And we thank you for the $14 million. We're going to close the public hearing on 5060 and open the work session.
Madam Chair.
Representative Leonard.
Notwithstanding the political philosophy that's promulgated, I'll move the Cashman Amendment to House Bill 5060.
Okay, before we do that, did you want to make an explanation to the committee on the budget?
Well, Madam Chair, members, the Cashman Amendment, which Representative Leonard is moving, would be the existing bill is just a blank bill. What the Dash 1 amendments would be, and you should have had those distributed to you this morning, is they would appropriate $5 million to the emergency board for allocation to the Department of Higher Education for the Oregon Industry Education Investment Fund. And these monies, the process as has, I think, been outlined fairly clearly is that the Engineering Technology Industry Council would come up with a proposal for the use of the funds, but the Board of Higher Ed would have to approve, and that these funds would then be, the request would then be brought to the emergency.
This is $5 million in the governor's budget.
Yeah. The $5 million, the governor had $8 million for targeted investments, for targeted enrollments in both engineering education and teacher training. The legislature has already passed a budget so far that is about $14.6 million above what the governor had recommended. This would increase that by $5 million more. So
this is the co-chair proposal, is what I understand,
yes.
To add in the $5 million.
That's correct. Okay. Any other questions about those? We have a motion before us. I would like to make this a one time, not include this in the roll-up cost next time around.
I'm sorry?
Make this a one time, the $5 million, so they cannot roll it up next time.
Well, we can't bind the next legislature to that.
Yes, we can put it into a roll-up. We can.
How do you state that in the amendment?
That would not be stated in the statutory language, but in the budget report, we could identify these as one-time funding that would not be included in the current service level, or would not be continued in the current service level for the next.
I guess what I move by, I mean, if the next legislature chooses to fund,
that's
the right
fund. They would have that, but they couldn't come back with this $5 million in the current service level.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just mentioned this. Okay. All right, I have a motion before us to adopt the Dash 1 amendment to 5060. Any objections?
Madam Chair.
Senator Fisher?
Yes, I object on the basis of the what I said before. I'm not ready to go ahead with enhancements like this until we find some reasonable answer to some of the other education issues. And I guess if that isn't forthcoming very shortly, we've got time to work on this at a later date.
Let's begin right recess for about 5 minutes. Dean, I was in the process of taking a motion from Representative Lennon to adopt. Do we need him, or do you want somebody else want to make another motion? He's out in the hall. Here he is.
Okay.
All right. In the process of adopting the Dash 1 amendment to House Bill 5060. And do you have any objections to the Dash 1 amendment?
Objection.
Senator Gordley objects? Any other objections?
I object, Madam Chair.
Senator Edwards?
And I just want to state for the record, I just don't feel that it's, I don't, a couple things. One, I'm not comfortable with the timing of this right now in the budget process. We just appropriated approximately $89 million to higher ed. We're now adding another $5 million, so now we're up to $94 million over the governor's recommended budget. I didn't support that effort at the time, again, for timing issues in the scheme of things for the budget. And I'm also a little concerned that I don't, we're asking to put out $5 million on a kind of a trusting basis, and I know that's not unprecedented, but I guess I'd like to have seen a plan before. If they had $24 million, we don't know what we're doing with this money, and I just don't feel comfortable at this point not to give this authority up to the e-board.
And you do understand they do have to come back. You don't. You're just not comfortable with the e-board deciding if their programs or what their plan is.
Well, I think that, I guess I don't like the cycle we're in, which is that we should be deciding this, not the e-board. And it's not that I don't trust the e-board. They already have a plan of $24 million, how they want to spend it. So I don't see, I guess I'm troubled by the fact they could still come in and tear down this $24 to $5 million. It seems to me it wouldn't be that cumbersome just so that we have a decision to make this session. But I want to make sure it's clear I support the policy idea of making these types of investments. I'm troubled by the timing and the fact that we don't have the whole picture in front of us.
Madam Chair, first of all, we're being asked to vote on the chief of the co-chair's budget without the rest of the co-chair's budget. And so I'm without a context today. I'm just being allowed to see a chief. And I object to that. But then yesterday, in another committee, some of Oregon's most vulnerable citizens, seniors and disabled, took a cut, a serious cut in a human resources budget. And I personally think that kind of cut is immoral. It troubles me deeply. To be here today, now looking at an investment in engineering and higher ed. I'm troubled on a number of accounts. Senator Cho talked earlier about our need to look at our tax structure, tax reform. We need more revenue. That's a discussion that needs to be going forward. That's a separate issue. But the bottom line for me is that, yesterday we cut some of Oregon's most vulnerable citizens, and now we're turning around and we're talking about a $5 million investment. And I'm just totally uncomfortable with what we're doing and the process.
Senator Trump.
Madam Chair, I'm going to vote for the amendment, and I really do believe in investments like this. I think they make sense for the future. I think the timing is bad for this particular bill to go forward.
It seems to me that we're going to be in the process of negotiation. We don't know what is in the $100 million that the Senate President has, for instance, suggested in his budget or in the Senate budget that came earlier, whether this $5 million is part of that $100 million or not. We don't even know that for sure. And there are other proposals out there for additional investments. The model, I was pleased to invest in that, but it seems to me that to do this now is premature. I'd like to go through this. I believe in this kind of investment. I think it will pay dividends in the future, and I agree that if we can train engineers and they're here good working constructive citizens, that they will be helping us in so many ways, including the taxes they pay. But we really do not have enough revenue to go around in this budget. It's a zero-sum game, and it seems to me like that this is something that ought to be there. I hope that we'll be able to get it there. But I think we need to see how all the money is going to be expended. The public schools are awfully important. Human resources is important. And we just don't know those things right now. And so that's why I'll vote for the amendment. The $5 million is in the bill, and I hope to be able to vote for the bill later, but I think it's too early.
I just want to remind the committee that the request is for $24 million. The governor's budget had about $8 million in his budget, and we've allocated $5 million, so this is not outside of his recommended budget.
Well, as it was described, though.
No. He's had $8.3 million.
He had $8 million, yes, but we've gone beyond his budget in the other appropriation, which I supported, and think was good for the model. And I'm likely to support this if we can find the money to do everything we need to do in the right way.
Thank you, Senator. Okay. Senator Albrow.
Madam Chair, are either you or Senator Timms able to tell us what else is in the $100 million? Is this a piece of getting the $100 million, which I personally support and I did support? What else do we have that's going to be in the $100 million?
I will defer to the co-chair.
$100 million, I'm sorry, I say nothing.
Senator, President Adams and Speaker Snodgrass both pledged $100 million to higher ed. I also supported that figure. And so my support for this is based on the idea that this would be a building block towards $100 million.
And it is, along with the extension service experimentation, which I believe you'll be hearing next, right?
And so the question is, is the co-chair's budget going to try to go over the $100 million, or are we going to stop there? That's the question.
We're going to fund what we can. I believe I'll yield to my very able co-chair.
Madam Chair, committee, for the record, Leslie Lewis. When we did, and I know it's been several weeks, and we discussed timing. Probably we should have done this piece right after we did higher ed budget. There's just been a lot of things going on, and we didn't think to do it. But it might have been in your memories better had we done it closely following in higher ed budget. As part of the new budget model, the chancellor had $2 million in there for this high-tech program, and has also had $2.89 million in there for targeted enrollment for high-tech. So that was a total of $4.89 million. We, as you may recall, we took those pieces out of higher ed's budget, and we told them that you would see them in another bill. And it was 4.89, we just rounded it off to 5. That's the $5 million you're seeing today. It has been part of the plan all along for the total spending for the higher ed pieces, and it is part of the $100 million that you've seen discussed.
Okay. Well, Madam Chair, I am going to vote yes. I am very unhappy for several reasons. One is that we are making serious cuts, as the senators pointed out, in human resources. We've made some cuts that were very specific, and this budget is just nothing. I mean, this budget is just $5 million worth of mush. And I am going to vote for it because
specifically because Portland State came to me and explained how they were working with high schools to bring students in. I believe in the long run, even though these people are not able to tell us what they're going to do with this $5 million, that disgusts me totally because we have had a month that they have known that they were going to have $5 million. The fact that they come back today and they have no idea what they're going to do is really disappointing. However, because Portland State came to me and explained how they work with high schools, how they are bringing disadvantaged students into the engineering path, and because I believe that Oregon students should be getting these high-tech, high-paying jobs and that they should have the education that is of a quality that brings them to that level, and that is another piece of supporting Oregon's disadvantaged and all of Oregon's students. I'm going to vote for it, but I'm not happy.
Madam Chair, Representative Ross, I unfortunately didn't hear the testimony, and you know, I would just say I do believe in the Engineering Council. I do believe that they can present a good plan. I'm sorry if they weren't prepared today to present that plan to the committee, but I share many of the statements you've made, Representative Ross. These are good jobs here in the state of Oregon that we can help Oregon students get trained for these high-tech jobs in the computer and high-tech fields, and it's, you know, we can make really good lives for Oregonians. It's part of a down payment on the future. These are high-income jobs which will produce, good economy for the state of Oregon and benefit all of us. And again, I apologize to the committee that, you know, they weren't able to adequately explain to you their plan, but I know that they will, you know, that they will come back to the e-board and explain a good plan of how they're going to use these.
I'd like to go ahead and Representative Jackson.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to say I listened very carefully to the testimony, and I'm very concerned about the problems that some of us have with the budget. But for me, it's kind of a part of a philosophy, and that is the importance of education, and in particular, in this case, the importance of engineering. And I know there are some shortcomings, perhaps, in the fact that we can't explain in detail how this $5 million might be used, but I like the concept of the word investment. I think that's very, very important. I like the idea of the word vision. I think we need a vision. I think we have to have some faith. I think much of life is lived on faith. It should be. If not, we're pretty cynical. And so I'm going to vote for this budget,
okay,
for this amendment.
Thank you. All right. Any objections to Senator Gordon and Representative Edwards on the dash one amendment? Okay. Motion carries.
Madam Chair.
Representative Leonard.
I'd move House Bill 5060 to the floor with a due pass recommendation as amended. I'm sorry, to the Pulse Committee. As amended with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Leonard moves House Bill 5060 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Can I speak to the?
You may.
I mean, this is a terribly awkward position I find myself in because I completely agree with Senator Gorley, Senator Krill, and Representative Ross. And I think a lot of the angst that some of us feel, I mean, I think the range of emotions range from frustration to anger, and I'm somewhere in there, could be relieved for us if at least those of us on Ways and Means knew what the balance sheet looked like. And I feel somewhat like I have a nice car, as I was telling Senator Crowder, break, roll up in front of the Capitol, and the salesman says, just take it, it's yours, how much is it? I ask, and he says, well, we'll send you the bill later, but it's a nice car. And I kind of feel like that is where I'm at. I'm in the dark, but I do, just for exactly the reasons that Vinnie Ross stated, and I won't go over that again, but I do support this because I believe in this kind of program so much. But as Senator Crow said, at some point we all have to sit at the table and understand that not only do we reap returns off our investments, They have to have the initial capital up front to make these kinds of investments in all kinds of different areas, including human resources. And so for me, that's kind of my angst. Another frustration is the fact that as we move these budgets through, and I gather it's the leadership's intention to move these budgets through, we're also talking about negotiating the end of the session and the budget issues. The budget itself is supposed to be a process of negotiation. And if at the same time we're negotiating, we're passing the budget, it makes it really fairly difficult to do that negotiating. So I wonder what the intentions are. Are you going to pass out all the budgets while we're negotiating? So then what happens with the negotiation? The negotiation should seem like they're meaningful. And I wonder how meaningful they'll seem if we're rolling through budget after budget. So what is the strategy? Does anybody know what the strategy is? If we're going to just do the budgets, then why do the negotiations?
Madam Chair, that's not an easy question to answer. But my answer is this, that we hold the system accountable throughout, which I believe we did last session and the session before. So we hold the system accountable, and we make the decisions that we have to make on priority areas. And technology, to me, is a priority area. If it isn't, I think there's something wrong with the total system. For the reason, we should all realize we're in the technology era, and we better be taken care of. So we put so much money in here, evidently not too outlandish, because it's fairly close to what the governor wanted. And in this process, that's what it is. It's the process of priorities and accountability as far as I'm concerned. Now, if you need a figure that will, I think the more budgets we pass that we believe in, they probably won't be in the negotiation area, possibly. I think that's an advantage. It's not a disadvantage. Because we'll be here till September. If we fill a room with people that are going to negotiate the budget, we got real problems. Because every one of us sitting here has a different idea of how we impact the system and how we handle it. And we're here for a limited time, I hope. And I think it pays to make your priorities and move ahead.
Senator Nelson? Call for the question. Senator Nelson calls for the question. Any objections? Call for the question. So the motion before us is House Bill 5016 as amended to the full with a due pass. Any objections? Senator Gordley and Senator Crowe?
And I'm going, Madam Chair, vote explanation. I do want to get the other. There's no
question. Representative Edwards? Any other?
One clarification, Madam Chair. You had mentioned that there would be a budget note, but it's the one time it's not to be.
It's in the narrative.
It's in the narrative. Not a budget note.
Madam Chair, just a vote explanation. I really want to vote for this budget. I really do believe that this is an important thing to do. And I may change my vote as this thing moves through the process. I hope I can. I want to. But I do believe that somehow or other the public school is a very high priority with me, and getting to the 4.95 million, I think, is crucial for the public schools. I know the Corvallis schools, if they don't get about that kind of funding, are going to have to make cuts. And I know that it's 5.1 in the Portland schools, so they're going to be making cuts. And so all of these, it's a zero-sum game here, and all of these things are interrelated. I think this is a tremendously good investment for the future of the state of Oregon. So I have real, real qualms about voting no this time, and I hope that I don't have to down the road.
Thank you, Senator. House Bill 5060. Any other objections? Okay. House Bill 5060, as amended, be passed to the full committee.
Now, I'll give a vote explanation.
You may.
I want it on record that I support it.
Okay.
matter of fact, as far as supporting high tech, I wish we could spend about $20 million during a capital and get something we could actually use. Take home with us to use in districts and things like that that would be feasible, so we could look for maybe having yearly sessions or something with a reasonable, but it's just a matter of getting the cart before the horse as far as I'm concerned on this whole process, and I don't have a problem with how higher ed will use it. I think that they will use it and leverage it. I think there's enough business people involved in this prospect that that will be handled very well. So from that standpoint, I don't have a qualm about going through with it. It's just that I have a hard time just dealing out enhancements when we have to go cut places. And believe me, for all the screaming education is done about being cut, and that goes for the K-12 too. They haven't been cut anyway here like human resources. They've been cut all the time, every year, every session, from time immemorial about. And I don't say that strictly because I've been in the nursing home industry anymore, and these folks are saying they want high tech because they're in the high tech industry. We're all important cogs in the business of government. Many of the people that are getting shortchanged by some of the things we cut out of the human resources or high tech people too that have lived all their lives and worked in the high tech industry and stuff too. So it affects every one of us, and I'm appreciative, very appreciative for the high tech contribution to this state, and you can ask Dr. Risser about my working with him trying to get some of the things done in higher education that I feel are very necessary, and I've always supported the high tech, but not necessarily at the expense of everybody else. And that's the problem that I have, is trying, we have a block of money, and if we would sit down and divide that block of money fairly evenly, and then go out and ask the people to help us in the areas that we think we didn't have enough to do in, and go and support those efforts, I'm behind it 100%, and I think the people would be too. But it's really difficult when you've got leadership in the form of the governor's chair going out and asking for unrealistic amounts of money compared to what we have to spend for one certain issue. And we got to get some pressure over there, and some of these people better be looking at that from the standpoint of what they're doing when they're advising the governor, talking with the governor about what he said on education, when it's mostly, it seems, in my opinion, a grasp for more taxes from the people, not how we use the taxes that we properly have.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you for the opportunity. I appreciate it. And
thank you.
I appreciate your position here as chair, and thank you for your work.
Thank you, sir. With that, we are done.